Well, it's a great joy to be with you and to see the shining faces of our visitors, some of them returning after some time again to their spiritual home. And, of course, a joy and with thanks and gratitude for all of the members of the Sangha who have worked so hard to create the conditions that enable us to put on this retreat and all our retreats and all our events, and to function to complete our mission. And a special welcome to those in our Love Stream Sangha, wherever you may be in the phenomenal space of the great illusion. We are all together in oneness in the real. And so it's a great honor, privilege, and joy to share the vibrational frequency of the blissful self with all of you manifestations of the One. And to bring the fullness of that infinite energy into the phenomenal field in order to transform the world from a hell realm again into a heaven. And it's a great joyous mission that we have all been given to participate in this transformation of the creation by tuning to the will and the presence and the bliss of the Creator. So the weekend seminar, retreat, workshop, ordeal, rite of passage, as you wish, is written in very large and accurate print. Very well done. The power of God is striking. The secret alchemy of transformation is underway. So this is the announcement of the state of the world today. And it is an invitation to accelerate your own secret alchemy and to create the conditions for you to be struck by the lightning of God's presence. It's called in Hinduism and Buddhism the Vajra, the lightning bolt of the divine descent into one's being. The divine current of Shakti that transmutes the consciousness, that completely incinerates the ego in one instant and enables the soul to expand in total surrender to receive the presence of God and unify with that level of consciousness and bring about liberation and the activation of the power of divine magic. You know, the world in the Indian philosophy is referred to as Maya. But Maya is in Spanish magia. Magia means magic. It means that we're in a magic dimension because we are in the mind of God. If you believe you're in a world separate from God, you don't understand the nature of reality. And it's very important to shift your paradigm to get this. The world itself, the elements of nature and of consciousness that nature is made of are woven with the three strands of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. The world is made of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. These are the three aspects. They're not really separate. but you could say that they are ways in which the presence of God is perceived. Sat means the real, our state of being. If you are in a state of awareness, which you always are, even in deep sleep, even though you're not aware at an ego level, the awareness is there, or else you wouldn't hear the alarm clock and wake up. So the awareness is always present. It's even present after the death of the body, but the ego is usually either not there anymore when the body, the physical body, dies, or if one has remained in a kind of a closed-hearted ego state, one may have to go through a bardo and have what's left of the ego somewhat torn to shreds so that the soul is freed to go to the light and achieve reunion with the forgotten source of our being, if you have forgotten it. But that presence is always here, and it is our function to realize it. Now, you understand about lightning, physical lightning. It occurs when there is a bifurcation between the positive ions of a cloud that is caused by the rising air currents that strip electrons away from the lower levels of the cloud, and the cloud itself bifurcates into a negative and a positive element. And on the ground, so the cloud remains in a more positive state. And then if you're on the ground and you are in a state that is relatively negative in relationship, then the lightning current, like a spark plug, the spark will jump and you will be hit by that lightning. So it's the positive and the negative that must come together, right? Now, what is that at the level of consciousness? Because we don't really want to be hit by the physical lightning, okay? But we do want to be hit by the divine lightning. Although sometimes being hit by the physical lightning can also bring about a near-death experience that will produce a similar effect, but it's not quite the same. So how do we do that? Well, to create the negative space, you have to empty out your mind of egoic thoughts. You have to create a space of emptiness, like a vacuum. This is what's referred to as shunyata. And in that vacuum of emptiness, the fullness of God's presence then will enter in and saturate the space. Okay. Now, the world is already saturated by the presence of God, but because there isn't the emptiness, the shift of the level of vibrational frequency to activate and awaken the consciousness that is identified with the body will not take place. There has to be the emptying out. So that's the process of Sat Yoga. Sat Yoga, we could say in a nutshell, is the deactivation of the ego mind. Okay? It's the deactivation, to be more technical, of the manas and the ahankar by the buddhi. Okay? There are three basic aspects of consciousness that pertain to the ego, even though the buddhi is partly in the ego and partly in the soul level. The manas is the mental chatter. The ahankar is represented really by the egoic urges that will become thoughts in the mind, usually of things you want. You know, I want a drink. I'm going to take one. That's ahamkar, even though it may be something that is appropriate for the body. But it is still done as an egoic intentionality. And especially if you want something that is not necessary for the body's survival or well-being, but it's an addictive desire to support a sense of lack or neediness in the ego, then it strengthens the ego's resistance to emptiness. And so there's usually a constant uprising of egoic thoughts and willful intentions. And it is this that the mind must be emptied of. And the buddhi, which is the intellect, has to be purified enough to recognize the importance of doing that. It has to be sufficiently out of avidya, or ignorance, that it recognizes that all of the thoughts that the ego is producing, all of that mental chatter, is based on illusions, fantasies, projections, and a desire to fulfill the desire of others, for you to be a certain way and want certain things and do certain things. And it is part of what the Buddhists refer to as the codependent origination, because the ego is in a state of codependence with others, and it gets most of its thoughts from the outside, from originally the parents and the family system, and then the religious system and the social system and political system and all of the systems that you've been indoctrinated into, including now the media and the internet, especially social media. So you get thoughts and ideas and new expressions and styles and attitudes and all of that, and they are taken in. So there's nothing original in the ego, and it's a hodgepodge of different partial objects, partial mental objects, and partial subjectivities. And the ego, because it's not a unified whole consciousness, but a split consciousness, not only does it have dissociated fragments so that you different aspects of yourself can come in at different time with different sub-personalities. You know, sometimes you are talking to someone and it's all, oh, mi amor, mi vida, mi corazón. And then sometimes it's, you brat, you idiot, why did you, you know, and you turn into a monster. And so both of those kinds of fragments can alternate, and there are many others, right, that we all know about. Not only that, there's a sensor that keeps you from knowing even deeper levels of fantasy and desires and intentions and paranoid fears, etc., murderous rage, whatever it has to be kept away from Jekyll and kept with Hyde, must hide in the basement of the subconscious so it doesn't interrupt and get revealed at inopportune moments. So the ego is a very complicated system. It's not a single I, all right? It's a package of representations, each one of which has its own internal intentionality. And so there's always internal conflict within the ego. And there are stronger and weaker fragments that are always at war. And these internal elements of incoherence within the ego consciousness become projected out and they become one's external world. So if you're in the ego consciousness, everyone in your world is a part of your own shadow, which is why you like some people and hate others and avoid others and try to attract others and et cetera, et cetera. But your world is made up of these charges that have to do with one's own forbidden knowledge and often unbearable knowledge. And often you attract the repetition of traumas that occurred a long time ago because they have to be symbolized. Because the ego is in a state not of being, but of becoming. And so it can't stop the thinking process. If people wonder, how come I sit to meditate, but I can't stop my mind? Because the mind of the ego will not stop because it fears its own death. If it stops becoming, because it has no essence, It will literally stop existing if you deactivate your mind and stop producing ego thoughts. If it goes on too long, you'll be disoriented. You won't know who you are, and anxiety will enter into one's consciousness, and one will immediately distract oneself or fall asleep or do something else to avoid sitting with oneself and entering into the depths of one's being, because you have to go through the shadow level in order to reach the real self. So this is the obstacle that stops most people, and it prevents the lightning bolt from being sent. So the main purpose of the retreat will be, how do we overcome this obstacle of the ego's resistance to the real? You see, when you get to a deep enough level of silent presence, you become aware that the ego was a fantasy, a fabrication, and that the ego's ideas are a whitewashing, an imaginary world that it has created. It doesn't live in the real world because the real world is too traumatic for the ego. And so it has to live in a bearable illusion. And because of that, it will usually adopt a number of superficial behavior patterns to avoid going deep within and discovering the self. So one has to become aware of those avoidance patterns and the motivation behind them. And one has to have the determination to discover the truth of one's being in order to attract that lightning bolt of God's presence. Now, if one is sensible and you ask yourself, what's the lifespan of my ego? You know, it doesn't outlive the body, which is, a very short span of time, versus what is the lifespan of your real self? The real self, of course, is known in the Abrahamic traditions as God. It's nothing less than God, the real, ultimate, supreme self, which is who you really are. What's the lifespan of God? So which lifespan do you want? Because if you live in the ego, when the body dies, your consciousness will lose its continuity. In that bardo state that I mentioned, the remaining sanskaras, which are like the the skeleton traces of the basic intentionality of the ego will remain as standing waves that will reincarnate and will produce a new life for whatever remains of the ego, but it'll have no memory. It'll be a different ego, a different person, probably with a different sex, a different skin color, a different language, a different culture, etc., and a different time, of course, and it will have its own set of traumas. So getting off the wheel of the life and death of the ego is a pretty urgent matter, which is what has been taught by Eastern philosophers for thousands of years, but very few have chosen to get off the wheel. And so the population has grown, and the accumulation of negative karma that has to do with the ego's resistance to the real has increased lifetime after lifetime. So that a world which began as the most beautiful reflection, magic, remember, magical display of God's beauty, creativity, joy, love, a miraculous nature of divine possibility, all of that that existed in the initial age, the Satyuga, that gradually declined till we reach the end of time in Kali Yuga, has now become a world which has so little of that beauty and magic and miraculousness left that it has become a very dark hell realm, and the most savage, cruel, mean, greedy, criminal egos have taken over, and we are living in a world that those older souls from a better, more beautiful time cannot tolerate and feel like misfits in such a world. Whereas the younger souls who are part of that vibrational frequency feel very much at home at the end of Kali Yuga. It's their world. But if you're an older soul, it doesn't feel like this is your world, which is why we tend to want to create oases of sanity and sobriety and peace like an ashram. Although, as you see, very few want to be part of such a world because it doesn't have the jouissance, it doesn't have extreme enjoyments, and like war, for example, and all of the ways that human beings relate to each other with great violence and enjoy the violence of fight clubs and sports and politics and, the stupidity of the world, which is growing greater every day. And even if from this one lifetime, if you've lived long enough, you may have seen the difference between politicians from Churchill and FDR and Lenin to Biden and Boris and Rishi and Schultz and all of those. Yeah, I don't need to mention them all, but if you just compare the level of intelligence and of coherence and statesmanship, etc., you can see that the fall is pretty steep just in one lifetime. And now, of course, very few people, I think, ask the question, how is it possible that humans have evolved to a point where we could create such incredible technological advances that we can go to other planets, we can change our DNA, our genetics, we can do all kinds of things, and yet all we've done is created bioweapons, weapons of mass destruction, weapons of the to take away freedom from people? Why have we created a prison planet rather than a heaven? How could we evolve technologically and yet emotionally and psychologically we are more retarded and primitive than ever? It's quite a paradox. But that's the nature of Kali Yuga. And we have to live that paradox and understand that we have poured our intelligence into technology because it served the interests of military and political, social dominance. The urge to dominate is the key to understanding the ego, and to manipulate and to subtly control and possess and to hoard and to be able to create collusions and alliances that increase the power to dominate the world. And so now we have reached a point where the major power blocks are head to head in a final confrontation, and they have all of the weapons necessary to destroy the world in a few minutes. So here we are at the brink of this point where we may in fact not have much of a lifespan left at all, no matter what the age of the body is, because of the perfect storm of events, programs, processes, of genocide through injection, through famine, drought, geoengineered weather changes, and the environmental poisoning of the planet, et cetera, et cetera. I don't need to belabor all of that. I'm sure you're all aware of current events. So the situation then has reached its most extreme level. We are at the same time saturated by the presence of God and in total ignorance of God and living in the exact opposite qualities from God consciousness in a world that has become demonic. And those who resonate more with the side of the light than of the dark want to know, how do we deal with this? How do we bring peace? How do we bring prosperity and beauty and freedom and justice and fairness and goodness back into the world? And it's only through the power of God that that can be achieved. But one of the aspects of Kali Yuga is the indoctrination of nearly the entire population into atheism, materialism, consumerism, and worst of all, narcissism. So the ego that is egocentric, that is completely wrapped up in its own petty concerns, even if it's a believer in God, will not truly leave the ego behind, empty out, in order to have that divine thunderbolt transform the consciousness from ego into avatar. It won't happen. And so the question is, how do we overcome a barrier that we can know about, and we can even say, yes, yes, I want that, and yet we don't do it. We don't take the action necessary. We don't have the willpower to overcome those internal conflicts and resistances in the ego. And the ego will quickly, even if its fantasy is ruptured by the speaking of a truth like this, it will quickly suture that and go back into the fantasy, oh no, everything will be fine, I'm going to go and live a normal life and be very happy and do things in the next 10, 20 years, and I have new businesses I want to start, and, you know, I'm going to travel. There's places I want to take vacations. And, you know, the ego will make up a whole list, a bucket list of what it wants, and completely forget the situation that it's in. As long as it can, it will stay in denial. And that's another question. Now, maybe that's not true anymore for all of you here, but it's true for most. Even those who have awakened politically and socially tend not to awaken spiritually. So the question then of how to deactivate the mind and attract that thunderbolt usually requires a gradual process. So we can divide the spiritual journey into three phases. There's the very slow and gradual process of getting it and really understanding the truth, especially the key truth that the world is not real. That this is not your body and your appearance in the world is not who you are. It is a complete delusion. The world is a dream in the mind of God, and you are a character in that dream. And as a character in that dream, you have no free will. That's why you can't overcome the ego's resistances, or its symptoms of suffering, or its attraction of repetitions of karmic patterns, etc. The world is not real. And the ego is not real. The ego lives in what we refer to from psychoanalytic terminology as the imaginary register of consciousness. It's all made up of fantasies, projections, and of false beliefs that it was indoctrinated into or picked up from the media, etc., that are comforting and that create a sense of certainty or a feeling of orientation. And the ego doesn't want disorientation or uncertainty. It doesn't want to not know. It doesn't want to feel clueless, even though it is. And so we first have to come to terms with the fact that the ego is clueless. It is an NPC. It is a character that is being played by forces that are not in its own control, and that it is not a unified consciousness that can change its patterns of action until there is an awakening from the delusion that the ego and its world constitute. And only through the inactivation of the mind and the emptiness of the ego's becoming will there be enough of a vacuum that the presence of a greater intelligence can come into the consciousness. So we talked about Sat Chit and Ananda. Chit is the intelligence of the real self. The ego, it has an incoherent intellect because it is too split and too based on false beliefs and intentions that are not in accord with reality. So the ego, being disconnected from God, is not able to receive that higher intelligence. Or it can perhaps get glimpses in moments, or it can receive dreams that have information, but that need to be decoded, and the decoding of dreams accurately requires that higher intelligence. So without that shift, which is mostly what the alchemy is about, the lightning bolt can't strike. So there's a very gradual process, and then that gradual process, when it achieves the emptiness of ego consciousness, the lightning bolt will hit, and there will be a satori. And now a satori, it can be a temporary moment, an aha, where suddenly everything makes sense and time stops and you feel you are one with everything and all is God consciousness. There is only the self, but it can fade. And if you get such a lightning bolt that it doesn't fade, then because it wiped out the entirety of the ego, then that's a very rare event, but that's what is needed. But even then, there will be still another third phase of still a gradual, but a more accelerated learning curve, in which now that the lightning bolt has hit, and because the lightning does not happen in time, it is a moment of timelessness. It is a moment when you are touched by eternity. So the lightning bolt doesn't actually go away. It becomes a pillar of light that's a standing wave through which you will receive ever more wisdom, information, power, joy, until you are so saturated with the presence of the blissful self that that's all that remains. And that will bring liberation. But there's that learning curve of cultivation in which you receive training from God, who is the ultimate Sat Guru, will bring you to the point where you understand how to achieve the greater mission, not the ego's mission or even the soul's mission, but the avadutic mission or even avataric mission that can only be completed on the angelic level of consciousness that participates in the transformation of this cosmic drama that is a play in the mind of God of incredible intelligence and simplexity. So infinite complexity and infinite simplicity. And one will be able to then function spontaneously as a channel and medium of the Tao, or the will of God, without any middleman, without any interference of ego or even of soul, which is a more subtle vehicle, but still separate from the source, like a ray of sunlight versus the sun itself. So because Kali Yuga, this time period, this modern, postmodern age, has been a time of, since Nietzsche, the death of God, the eclipse of God consciousness from the world, the exile into the hell realm of lost souls. And there is no worse fate than the disconnection from the presence of God. So the urgency of reconnecting in order to eliminate suffering, karma, but also to graduate from this school and to participate in the new creation is on offer now to those who are willing to go through that rite of passage, often called ego death. And this is the question everyone must face in their own heart. Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to undergo the rigorous practice of that deactivation of the ego consciousness so that God consciousness can fully enter in and produce the alchemical transmutation of every level of our being? So right now, let's take a minute and find out if you are willing and able to sit with a deactivated mind. Are you able to be alert and aware and awake, but with a thought-free consciousness in which there is peace, serenity, presence, and a connection to the source of your being? If you ask, who am I? If you ask, what is this I am-ness? What does it mean to be? Not to exist, which is the ego level, but to be, that beingness that is not in time, but in the timeless present. Because your real self and the delusional ego self that is in the dream field are in superposition. But when the ego empties out, then the superposition is completely decollapsed, and the totality of consciousness becomes one with that sliver of consciousness that is the ego. If you can handle the totality of presence and feel what happens when you stay in silence more than a few seconds, you may feel the presence of a tingling of joy or the flow of a current of energy, but it may also trigger anxiety and fear in the ego. Observe it carefully. And if you can put yourself in that level of total emptiness, where there's no thoughts, the citta vritti nirodha, the cessation of thoughts, of movements of the mind has stopped, cessation has happened, and no urges, no affects, no diversions, no deviations interrupt your silent awareness. Notice how it unfolds. And allow yourself to realize that your amness, your presence, is of the dimension of the real. It's not in the body or of the body, has no identification with the body, has no form, no name, It's not an object. Has no parts, no fragments, no differences. And can you allow yourself to be completely absorbed, absorbed into the silence, into the presence, into the divine vibrational frequency of the real self? And be saturated by the blissful light. If you can reach that point where you accept this peace, this stillness, this presence as your true nature, then you will notice that it is always present, even if you go back into the ego mind. It is present, but it's present at the ground, and you are focusing on the figure. It's a gestalt. But if you stay with the ground of being and not the figure of becoming, if you stay with the core of the self, the real, then it has a transmutational effect upon the ego mind. It dissolves its defenses and resistances and makes it gradually a vehicle that is capable of being fully divinized. And your divine nature, your Buddha nature, your Brahman nature, your Shiva nature, your goddess nature is here, now, always. And you can live in that nature, not in the false, fabricated pseudo-nature of the ego. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Okay, how many could feel the difference between ego and the real self? Yeah? Okay. Wonderful. So now you want to hold the frequency of the real. And if you didn't get all the way to the real, I'm sure you got at least into the buddhi, the intellect that is pertinent to the soul, and that by strengthening the resolve to remain the observer of the ego rather than entranced and lost in its machinations, to remain that witness, then the power will gradually increase that will enable you to let go of any remaining identifications and to know what real freedom is. And it's our birthright to be able to shift the locus of our attention from ego to soul, to the Holy Spirit, the Christ consciousness, the Buddha mind, call it what you will. But the God Self is present in all of us, and all of us are present within the Self. There is nothing other than that. So you cannot be anything other than that. So I'll stop here for this opening discourse and open the floor if anyone has questions or comments you wish to make about the talk, the meditation, the theme, the process of being struck by the thunderbolt and then being being given a distributorship so you can use the thunderbolt and wield it in the service of God yourself. Anyway, we have a microphone there. Is that how we should do it now? And people can, if you dare, to stand up and ask a question. Don't be shy, please. And Purusha, do we have anyone on the love stream or anything you would like to mention from that part of our sangha, which is the largest part of the lion's share of our sangha is online?
Yes, well, a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us online. We have people tuning in tonight from South Africa, the U.S., Canada, Australia, India, the Netherlands, and the U.K. And we have a question from Ashish, who says, could you please explain how karma gets transferred during reincarnation from an energy perspective? And a second question, what could be done to make kids' lives safe and on the path of Dharma?
Well, the karma is an incomplete intention. So people die with desires and fears that have not been released. And those desires and fears are based also on fantasy scenarios. And the information in these subconscious, usually, sometimes they're conscious, scenarios are contained in standing energy waves. And if one dies still in the ego consciousness, then those energies will find a womb to be able to enact, to grow a body which will be able to enact those desires. And so the consciousness will be drawn back to complete those intentions. You know, that you didn't get to accomplish in the previous life, but without memory of it. So that's why we have, for example, child prodigies who are, you know, they're concert pianists at age 4 or something. The sanskaras of that carried over from previous lives, and of course this happens very often, and you can even have aspects of the somatic aspect of the body that are similar to those of a past life, if that is relevant to one's desires and fears. Like, for example, there's been a lot of research done that someone who was shot by a bullet and died in their past life will have a mark in the body in the next life, and their child, when they often will do hypnotic regressions, with the child will remember the wounding or the killing, and the whole scenario that they went through, and even details of where it happened and by whom, etc. And the anthropologists have gone and verified these accounts. So there's a huge amount of literature now on people who remember their past lives, whose accounts have been validated. And this is in many countries, including those in which reincarnation is not acceptable, according to religious beliefs that are dominant there. So that's, I think, the answer to the first part of your question. The second is how to protect children. Is that the idea? From Well, if you're on the path of Dharma yourself, that's the main way to help children, because they are mimetic. They will imitate. They will do as you do, not as you say. And so don't just talk about Dharma to them, but live it. Otherwise, they'll become very cynical and anti-dharmic and rebel against everything that you hypocritically asserted that they should do. So the authenticity of the parents is essential. The educational system today, almost everywhere, is very inauthentic and very stupidizing. It's a very dumbed down system, and it destroys people's creativity and curiosity and willingness to struggle, to learn, and to grow, and to challenge themselves. There will need to be the creation of a kind of educational process that will encourage the flourishing of the growth of the intelligence, of all the forms of intelligence, because there are many kinds of intelligence, not just the verbal or the mathematical, but the intelligence of the heart and of the body and of the musical and the artistic and the all of the ways in which human expression can bring beauty and goodness and joy into the world. I hope that is helpful. Is there anyone here with a question that you want to ask? Okay, then go ahead then.
Okay, the next question is from Jose. When I was a child, I experienced a small thunderbolt. Mm. I experienced that God is everywhere, that He is love, that everything is okay. Why did this happen to me, and why can I not go back?
Well, you can go back, of course. But the why it happened was clearly you had some good karma from the past. You were probably a yogi in your last life and didn't quite make it. And so that incompleted intentionality finally struck. But because you were a child and it wasn't grokked in the fullness of a yogic consciousness that wanted liberation, because you were in a stage in which you actually had to grow an ego, not realize the self. Because children, you first have to have an ego before you go through ego death. You can't go, in Kali Yuga, you can't go straight from birth to liberated consciousness without going through the defile of the ego. Defile is an interesting word. It's a narrow passageway, like a narrow canyon. But what it really means is when you're defiled, your consciousness is narrowed and enters into a reality tunnel rather than into the real. And you avoid certain things, knowing certain things, encountering certain types of people and events, etc., and you become narrow-minded, and usually clinging and weak and dependent, etc., etc. So depending on the type of trauma and whether it's acute or chronic, the narrowing will be of a greater nature. And A trauma, in a way, is a rupture of Maya, of the illusion, with a worse illusion, a worse level of a delusion. In other words, a reality within the dream life of some kind of savagery or some kind of insult or abandonment or other kind of emotional wound or physical, but it's the emotional aspect that ruptures the going on being of consciousness. It stops that flow, and it has to then be sutured with another delusion, which can either be a psychotic delusion or it can have some other effect on one's mental health. But that suturing then will bring about ego defenses around the heart, so that one will not be hurt again, one will not love, one will not take risks, one will not be vulnerable, etc., etc. And so most people have suffered somewhat of a narrowing because of being defiled by traumatic events of one kind or another in this life. And the deactivation of that narrowing of consciousness is what the emptiness will bring about. Did I answer anything of any question? No? Okay. Anything else?
Yes, from Santosha, who says, in terms of sanskaras and bardo states, are repetitive dreams like bardo states? I have a very clear repeating pattern appearing in my dreams. It seems to bind me to my character.
Yes, that's what happens. I'm not sure what the question is. Is it more of a comment than a question?
Well, the question was, are repetitive dreams like bardo states?
Oh, like bardo states. Well, okay, it's a short-term bardo state, but what it really is an insistence by the soul that you get a particular message that you apparently aren't willing to get. Once you've gotten the message and acted on it in your waking life, the dream will not continue to repeat. It's because you're not listening and you're not interpreting accurately and you're not acting on the wisdom and the intention of the soul transmitted through the dream, that you have to keep getting that that information again and again. Okay?
Okay, this question comes from Noor. Dear Shunya, I have so much love and eternal gratitude for these teachings. I've been feeling that I'm close to the lightning strike, but I seem to find myself in fear that I will not have enough time given the worldly circumstances. Can you please advise me on how I can remove this fear?
Well, have faith in God, because this is God's theodrama, okay? And at the final act, the final scene of the play, that is the return of God to the world and the world's return to God. Everyone is going to get hit by that lightning at some point. You can accelerate it so it happens before the very end, and you can make sure it happens while you're alive and not after the death of the body, which allows much more good karma to eventuate and lead to liberation. But everyone is going to return to God very shortly. And as we get closer and closer to the end and people come out of denial and they realize the hopelessness of trying to solve this problem through political means or social activism or any of the ways that, that people are still attempting to deal with this, you know, or trying to buy Bitcoin or, you know, buy gold or whatever they're trying to do to beat the system, there's not going to be any way to avoid the fate of the world. And once you realize that, there is nothing else but the return to God that remains for us. The sooner you realize that that is the case, the more serious a meditator you will become. I guarantee it. And if you meditate with utmost total seriousness and your heart is sufficiently open to love God, if you're in duality, don't think of this as yourself, because otherwise you'll confuse it with your ego. That's why non-duality is a very bad theory, even though it's true for the ego, because the ego tends to see the word self and says, oh yeah, I am the self. I am that, and I'm already liberated. And of course, it's just words. It's not real. So the more you recognize that there is a supreme Lord, a supreme intelligence that is designing and choreographing and doing everything, and that only by surrendering to that being can we be saved from the fate of the ego, then your heart will open. You will be able to deactivate the mind through your devotion to God and the yearning for God to fill you with peace from anxiety. You know, how many people are burdened by the baggage of fear? Many people just live in fear constantly, and they're never free of it. Or they're living in fury, or in agitation, in despair, in depression. Everyone is suffering at the ego level from all of these feelings of helplessness and lack and unworthiness and guilt and shame, etc., etc. The only way out is to take refuge with the Lord, the Supreme One. And that mind, that infinite mind, once you realize that that is who you are, once you have attained union with that mind, you will realize you were never the character who is feeling those horrible feelings. This isn't your baggage to carry. You were never born. You never went through this. It's a dream. And when you're awakened from the dream, then you can transform the being that you think you are into a divine being in the dream itself. And then everything becomes beautiful. So why not do that? Why not live in bliss instead of fear and suffering? It's easy, because it really is who you are. But you have to pay the price of letting go of your illusions. That's all. Do you want truth? Do you want illusion? Illusion brings suffering. Truth brings freedom, joy, love, intelligence, graduation from the wheel of life and death. It brings everything you could want. It's easy, and it's who you are. So why put it off when the end is very close? Anyway, I think that's enough of an answer. Please, Kalyan.
I'd like to ask if you can expand on the comment that you made when you said that the lightning bolt is not in time.
Well, the lightning bolt is God's light. God lives in eternity, not in time. Time is an illusion. It's part of this delusion. All there is information. And for God, the entire information of the entire cosmos from beginning to end is present instantaneously. There's no time. No time at all. And so when you are hit by that lightning, you connect to your eternal self. And that eternal self enters time. And it turns time itself into the presence of the timeless awareness that remains constant throughout all the apparent shifts of the vibrational frequencies. In other words, you become unified as the ocean of consciousness, and all the waves don't mean anything. They're just part of your being, but it's not a world separate from you. It's just the ocean. And so that level of non-duality, which is timeless, and stillness, internal stillness, regardless of what's going on externally to the conscious vehicle, that creates an energy field and an effect on the morphogenetic field, the network of consciousnesses that are all connected, that bring about a shift in our destiny. But we remain in that stillness of eternal presence in which we realize we are deathless. And that's what brings the end to fear. Does that help?
Yes. Could we equate that to saying you enter into the noumenal?
Yes, that is the noumenal. Yes.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Beautiful. Okay. Is there any burning question before we adjourn?
Mm-hmm. Okay, a question from one of our pragyanis, Karim.
Okay, go ahead.
You speak about the bolt of lightning bolt. Can the opening rather occur gradually, or is it an all or nothing?
No, I say the first phase is gradual. And it's more like if you were bit by a venomous snake, and you could feel the poison gradually spreading through your organs. And you know it's soon going to reach your lungs and your heart. And as soon as that happens, there will be a cessation of functioning and you will die. It's that kind of a gradual process leading to ego death that you will feel once you've been bitten by the supreme snake, not the demonic one, but it's not venom, but it's nectar. And if you've received enough of that nectar of immortality, it begins to kill off the mortal mind of the ego. And gradually you become more and more still and serene and not of this world. Okay, please.
I'm just visiting, so...
We're all just visiting.
Yes. So,
what's your name?
Natasha.
Natasha, welcome.
You said about this gradual process of understanding that the truth, that the world is not real, mm-hmm. the body is not real. I've been practicing for a long time meditation, many retreats, sessions, and I've never experienced that. What my experience is that after intensive retreat, on the contrary, I am much more present in my body, in my life, I'm clear. I mean, it looks real, so I don't understand what you're talking about not being
okay.
real.
Okay, I agree with everything you're saying. You will be much more present. Because what you are is presence. But the more that you are present with a silent mind, the more you will realize you're not the ego, and that you are consciousness itself, and that you are using the body and you're using the capacity to think and to feel and to sense in order to bring that presence into the world to have an effect upon the field, which is bringing more of the Buddha mind, more of the nature of peace, more compassion into the world, right? More virtue, more love, more joy. And this is coming from a place where you recognize that the world is a flux. It's impermanent. It's in constant change, yes? And so everything that is impermanent is not really here. It's just a flash in the pan, a flux of a constant change. Nothing remains. You can't step in the same river twice. You can't even step in it once because it's in such a constant flux. And when you get down to what is the world made of, according to physicists today, it's made of quantum waves, probability waves. There's no such thing as matter. And those probability waves will collapse according to the desire of the observer. And the wave will become particles, etc. But all of this is waves of consciousness. And when you realize that's what it is, then you realize you're in a great dream. And yes, you're awake in the dream, so it feels real. But what is real is the superposition of consciousness with the dream because you are more awake in it. Okay? But the more awake you are in it also, the more you realize you're not really in it or of it. And that you come from a dimension beyond of that originary Buddhahood or divine nature that brought you here, which is God consciousness itself. And that's our home. That's where we belong. That's what is truly real because it lasts. It's everlasting, whereas this impermanent world can be destroyed and will be and is and has been. It goes through cycles of creation and destruction. Whereas the self is constant and eternal and everlasting.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, so we will adjourn for this evening and continue with lightning bolts of truth and of hopefully of bliss, and you will attract that ultimate lightning of liberation that will bring you into the union with God that is complete, permanent, and utterly blissful. And share the bliss so that all of us are saturated by that beauty of divine luminosity that you manifest. So I hope this has been a useful introduction to this theme, and let's go deeper tomorrow, especially in all of the meditation sittings in which you really allow yourself to completely deactivate the mind and sit in stillness with no intention to get anything, not even to reach God, a state of love but without an object, because God is not an other. God is not an object that you're going to attain. There is no actual separation. The separation is only caused by the mental activity. And when it stops, there is oneness already, because that is who we are. So you don't have to do anything, want anything, pray for anything. Just be. And that I amness itself will reveal itself as God.